shocking turn of events involving a Kansas City Chiefs football player. 25-year-old Javon Belcher commits suicide right in front of his coach. Police say the linebacker killed himself after fatally shooting his girlfriend at their home. NBC's Brian Moore tells us what happened.
After fatally shooting his girlfriend, Kansas City Chiefs linebacker Javon Belcher chose to end his own life at the stadium where his football dreams came true.
And I hold her naked body firmly in my hand, and I close my eyes tightly, and I slowly bring her whole closer to my lips, and I could be killed for what I'm thinking. It's beyond human experience. I could be killed for what I'm thinking, drinking cyanide in my dreams. It seems that I'm moving past my past, past elementary school days, past K to the 12th grade, where everybody knew that Boogie Down Productions would always get paid in full like Rakim, at least until black radio forgot him. Went rock bottom, fell 12 levels below Sodom, sold out. Well, all the white national radio conglomerates got him strung out. Like my old high school friend who used to wear three different leather suits a day and push the dime pieces in the jet black Benz. At least until he saw half his life end getting shot down on the roof of the projects. Now he just shoots up on the roof of the projects. And yet, even he has a longer life expectancy than me, because I could be killed for what I'm thinking. And I let her hole sit completely on my tongue, and I'm just dying for her to come. I want her whole nine to just ejaculate straight through my mind. I want her to come so hard that she blows off my headpiece so that I might finally have peace in my head. But instead I hear a million ancestors yell that I have no right to have no life. They tell me I am exactly what comes after the ones that survived the middle passage. They tell me I am directly descended from the ones who thought it was punkish to jump ship. The ones who mastered their masters, those angels, those gods who worked hellishly hard from can't see to can't see on a plantation, slaving for the very same Satan that they created. They grafted their own masters. And every night, a million bodies blacker than cooked soot on the bottom of a crack pipe in a dark corner of the basement of a crack house, when the moon signals midnight, sing to me. They sing that I am the ungrateful realization of their dreams. They sing that I am their social, technologically spoiled offspring. They sing, since it took 400 years of misery to bring me here, my suicide is not an acceptable offering. They sing that I was expressly put on this planet to speak dynamite to granite. That I was intended to spit tears into microphones so that billions of disenfranchised black children might find their way back home. And I cry, cause I am ashamed that I could be killed for what I'm thinking. And I want her to come so bad, but I manage. I want her to come so bad, but I manage. I want her to come for me so bad, but I manage to pull the gun off of my tongue, turn my thoughts indivisibly in the direction of black youth, and behold, ejaculating out of my throat is the truth.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
11 years ago, I came to live at Warm Springs for the first time. That was a period of great so-called prosperity. But, my friends, I would not go back to the conditions of 1924, and I do not believe that you people would want to go back to those conditions either. Of that year, and of the 5 years that followed it, I have a somewhat clear recollection, which you can verify for yourself. In that orgy of prosperity.
Oh, God. Ooh, oh, God. Oh. 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 Oh, God.
A wild speculation was building speculative profit for the speculators and preparing the way for you, the public, to be left holding the bag. In that orgy of prosperity.
Oh, you're right there. Oh. 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 Oh, God. Oh.
Banks, individually and by chain, were closing their doors at the expense of the depositors. In that orgy of prosperity.
Yes! 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 Oh! Oh! Oh, yes! 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 Oh!
The farmers of the South had become involuntary speculators themselves. Never certain when they planted their cotton whether it would bring 25 cents or 15 cents or a nickel. In that orgy of prosperity.
Yes! 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 Oh! 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 Oh, God. Oh.
The poorest vied with the richest in throwing their earnings and their savings into a cauldron of land and stock speculation. In that orgy of prosperity.
I'll have what she's having.
Slum conditions went unheeded. Better education was neglected. Usurious interest rates mounted. Child labor continued. Starvation wages were too often the rule instead of the exception. Yes, in those days, mammon ruled America, and that's why we're not going back to them. Those are the years for us to remember in the future. Those full paradise years before the crash came. Too much do we harp on the years that followed, when from 1929 to 1933, this whole nation slipped spirally downward, ever downward to the inevitable point when the mechanics of civilization came to a dead stop on March 3rd, 1933.
And again?
March 3rd, 1933.
And again?
March 3rd, 1933.
Three, oh, it's the magic number. Yeah, it is. It's the magic number. Somewhere in that ancient mystic trinity, you'll get three. Magic number in the past and the present, the future, faith and hope and charity in the heart and the brain and the body. You'll give you three. It's a magic number. It takes 3 legs to make a tripod or to make a table stand, and it takes 3 wheels to make a vehicle called the tricycle. And every triangle has 3 corners, every triangle has 3 sides. No one, no less. You won't have. Now there's 3, can't you see that it's a magic number? A man and a woman, hallelujah.
pattern once more.
3, 6, 9.
'Okay with or admire the fact that the Koch brothers have $44 billion, or that Steve Jobs, when he died, had $7 billion, or that the six heirs of the Walmart fortune have $100 billion, the same amount of wealth as the bottom 40% of America. Every one of these people is a psychopath. They are not any more fit for society than a guy who kidnaps neighborhood dogs and has them lick peanut butter off his balls. In fact, they're actually less qualified, because at least Mr. Nutter Butter is making dogs happy. People who collect that much money are psychopaths. They're not winners or heroes or titans of industry, and we shouldn't bow down to them or even respect a single thing that comes out of their overrated, overweighted faces. We don't respect anyone else who collects $10 billion of something. If you're one of those ladies who has 50,000 shoes, people put you in a special home. If you have a barn filled with Elmo figurines, you're considered a lunatic by most people, and they mumble behind your back, "I'm not sure how it happened. I heard that her priest touched her with an Elmo Pez dispenser. Well, I heard she had a bad acid trip 10 years ago, and she's never been quite right since. If you even say the word Elmo around her, she pees herself." And even if you don't judge these people harshly, you still don't take advice from them. How long would you keep listening to someone who's like, "Listen, you should quit your job and snowboard 24/7 because I have 15,000 human teeth in my garage, all obtained legally, and if you ask me, they're the only way to power the spaceship." So why do we behave any differently when someone collects a billion pieces of green paper with Alexander Hamilton's fugly mug on them? And these people almost never think they have enough. A psychopath is defined as someone having amoral, antisocial behavior, extreme egocentricity, with a failure to learn from experiences. The Koch brothers are in their 70s with $44 billion and yet spend all day, every day, scheming ways to get their hands on your Social Security. Because, and here's the important point, they're f***ing psychopaths! We need to break ourselves of this insane idea that they deserve our respect or admiration, our reverence or appreciation. No one walks into a house on the TV show Hoarders where there's 8 years worth of empty ice cream containers in a room filled with 17 years of Snapple caps and expired cats. No one walks in and goes, "Wow, you're really good at this. You must work really hard."
We interrupt this program to talk about, well, my interrupting on this program. Some of you have had enough, say, I go way too far. Art emails, "Your voice is very grating, and you continue to interrupt your guests when they are answering your questions. Why don't you retire?" Donald in Grove City, Ohio. Cavuto, "Will you please shut up and let your guests talk?" You had other stuff to say, but I lost the email. Anyway, Jim in Florida, "When you ask a question, shut up and listen to the answer. Your guests are trying to explain something and you keep interrupting. It's rude as hell." Jim, it's rude if they really are explaining, not so if they're just avoiding. And in this age of fiscal cliff-yapping politicians who'd rather spout speeches than offer solutions, a lot of avoiding going on here. Very few specifics. You might find it rude to interrupt a speech, Jim. I find it ruder allowing one. Betty in New Mexico writes, "I understand the need to prevent them from rambling on, but if that's what they're going to do, why bother booking them? To get answers, Betty. And when they're not answering or worse, stonewalling, I do have to step in. Still, some argue that I don't step in enough." From Carl in New York, "You let Democrats spin and spin." Elena in Detroit, "Curious how you never interrupt a Republican, Cavuto, don't you think? Are these guys watching the same show?" Sal in New Jersey, You're a gutless, spineless lapdog to whatever powerful guest you're sucking up to. You sit on that fancy set of yours like a clueless Buddha, letting these politicians run roughshod all over you. If you don't have it in you to challenge, how do I get this to your boss, Roger Ailes, so I can have him fire you? Sam Bill O'Reilly, Sal. And via MSN, you're a fat ignoramus. And you're wrong. I'm not an ignoramus. Kelly in Oregon, why don't you engage your guests more and show some class instead of all but calling them names, you puffed up plastic hair blowhard? I'll consider the classy suggestion, Kelly. This from David via AOL. If you're so smart, why do you look and sound so dumb? Well, you got me, David. Must be good genes. Vincent via Yahoo. Someone told me your voice sounds the way it does because you're sick or something. Then I'm in a doctor's office, and I caught this article on you, and I felt really bad. Not bad enough to like you, just bad that Fox couldn't see through its pity and find someone healthy and with it to replace you. Okay, Vincent, I'll put you down as a maybe on being a fan. Alonzo in Puerto Rico writes, where I come from, we beat the crap out of arrogant jerks like you. Alonzo, where I come from, we don't email stuff like that. We do it.
I remember when we broke up the first time, saying this is it, I've had enough. 'Cause like we hadn't seen each other in a month when you said you needed space.
What?
Then you come around again and say, baby, I miss you and I swear I'm gonna change. Trust me, remember how that lasted for a day. I say, I hate you, we break up, you call me, I love you.
I read somewhere you're very trusted. By whom? Aliens from outer space? Yes, Kyle, exactly. Alexa in New York City, I find you incredibly hot in an intellectual sort of way. Well, you're not alone, Alexa, you're not alone. Jen in Atlantic City, this kitty wants to play with a certain anchor boy toy. No interruptions, though. None intended, Jen, but you are scaring me. Morris via AOL. So I looked you up on the internet and discovered that despite what you show on the air, you're smart, well-educated, well-regarded. And here's what I found, the killer. 30 years in the business and you've never been fired? I pray there's always a first time and it's coming soon.
Picking fights and me falling for it, screaming that I'm right. And you would hide away and find your peace of mind with some indie record that's much cooler than mine.
So let's bring in our body language expert, Susan Constantine, to help us sort this all out. Susan, I love the body language experts when they come on. I love this. So let's get right to it. There's a photo of Mitt Romney. This is the one I really wanted you to look at. Mitt Romney having lunch at the White House this week. Bitter rivals now trying to make nice, at least for a photo op. So what does this photo tell you? How is President Obama treating the man he just beat?
Call this rigid Romney, you know, because his body language never changes. And you also, when you look at it, they're looking at each other's eyes, but look at where Romney kind of holds his body language, his hand in towards his torso. And President Obama is the one that actually reaches out to make, he's the initiator in the conversation and shakes the hand. But Romney doesn't move. But also, too, his hand is on top of Romney's. So he's pressing down as in the dominant role. But look at where their feet are planted. Okay, President Obama's in standing in the presidential seal, and he's basically saying, I am the one who's the chief and commander here.
Everywhere, like, such as.
And, of course, we've got Mitt Romney standing out. But then we look at their angles of their feet, and their feet are not joined together. In other words, they're not nearing each other's body language. They're basically saying, let's do this, and let's go, and let's get out of here.
Wow.
I used to think that we were forever, ever, and I used to say, never say never.
So he calls me up, and he's like, I can't believe you're working with Jake.
I know, like, all he does is whine about his YouTube comments. We are never working together again, like, ever.
No! Never, ever, ever getting back together. No, we never, ever, ever getting back together. You go talk to your friends, talk to my friends, talk to me. But we are never, ever, ever, ever getting back together.
By the way, I hope the camera folks had a chance to take a look at some of the Kinects, including that flag made out of Kinects. And, you know, Joe Biden was in Costco. He wanted to buy some of this stuff. But I told him he had too much work to do. I wasn't going to have him building roller coasters all day long. Now, of course, Santa delivers everywhere. I've been keeping my own naughty and nice list for Washington. So you should keep your eye on who gets some Kinects this year. There are going to be some members of Congress who get them and some who don't.
What we've seen this morning from the Commission and Parliament is a passionate defence of high salaries, index-linked pensions, chauffeur-driven cars, and a lifestyle that none of you would actually enjoy out there in the real competitive world. It's the status quo, convincing itself that it's doing a good job, despite the fact the public increasingly doubt you. I would remind you that every time taxpayers' money is thrown at common European projects, the results are less than a success. The common fisheries policy and its environmental degradation, and now, of course, the euro, and not just an economic, but a social disaster that is engulfing the Mediterranean. And it's all based on a flawed thinking that the state, if it has power and money, can create wealth. The dead hand of bureaucracy is destroying innovation and destroying jobs in Europe. National democracy and free markets would be a much better model.
Job numbers near historic lows, Forbes magazine has released a list of tips for finding a job, all of which involve witnessing an employer murder someone. Forbes says despite the grim economy, employers are still hungry for talented workers who know how important it is to forget about whatever they think they saw or heard.
So me and a couple of friends were out smoking at the Viaduct the other day, and we saw this really rich guy in a Mercedes pull up in his car and drop nothing. Now I'm the Vice President of International Development.
Starting salaries for positions gained in exchange for cooperation can be quite high, depending on qualifications, how much you saw that night, and whether you have any hard photos or anything. According to Goldman Sachs CEO Lloyd Blankfein, we had a great quarter and hired hundreds of new employees. I haven't done anything wrong, and all my employees will tell you the same thing because that's the deal we had. But the article warns that stumbling onto a coke-fueled CEO strangling a prostitute isn't a foolproof method for finding work, because employers are just as likely to murder you as they are to hire you.
Yes,
fighting is continuing in and around the Syrian capital, Damascus. Heavy shelling has been reported in some of the suburbs there. There is also a communications blackout with the internet and some phone lines down.
We're sorry. Due to telephone company facility trouble, your call cannot be completed at this time. Will you try your call again later?
Sometimes the justice system doesn't seem very just, such as the case with Florida's 2005 Stand Your Ground self-defense law, which allows the use of deadly force when a person can prove a perceived threat to his safety. Similar laws on the books in over 25 states. Stand Your Ground received much coverage earlier this year after the tragic and still unresolved shooting death of Florida teenager Trayvon Martin. It was back in the news last week after a task force convened by Florida Governor Rick Scott didn't find any major flaws in the law, despite significant evidence to the contrary, something we discussed here earlier this week. Now, Stand Your Ground is making news again after yet another senseless and heartbreaking shooting of a Florida teen. According to the account of the suspect, 45-year-old Michael Dunn, he and his fiance pulled into the parking lot of a Jacksonville, Florida convenience store last Friday night, where Dunn confronted four teenagers in an SUV and got into a heated dispute about the volume of the music in the teenager's SUV. During the altercation, Dunn fired 8 rounds into the car, killing one of the teens, 17-year-old Jordan Davis. Dunn and his fiance fled the scene, they claim, because they were concerned about their safety and returned to their home over 100 miles away.
He is a hustler, he's no good at all. He is a loser, he's a bum, 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 bum. He lies, he bluffs, he's unreliable. He is a sucker with a gun, 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 gun. I know you told me I should stay away. I know you said he's just a dog, a stray.
Also in the Gulf tonight, an investigation into the mysterious deaths of dolphins there. Someone is targeting them in a senseless and cruel way. ABC's John Schriffen is in Gulfport, Mississippi tonight.
Just like a lovable pet, dolphins are some of the friendliest animals in the water. But tonight, authorities patrolling the Gulf Coast are on high alert for attackers responsible for brutally killing them. Over the past 2 weeks, a disturbing sight here on the shores of the Gulf. Four dolphins found mutilated, either floating in the ocean or washing up on beaches in Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. Some have been found with bullet holes, one with its tail cut off, another missing its lower jaw.
What kind of a person would do this?
But mama, I'm in love with a criminal. And this type of love isn't rational.
Sounds preposterous, but get this. The United States actually hatched a plot during the Cold War to possibly nuke the moon. Brian Todd's got the latest on this bizarre story. I'm tempted to say it, I will. What were they thinking?
Well, Wolf, all sorts of wild ideas were floating around in the halls of government back in the 1950s. It was the height of the Cold War, security scares all around. American leaders felt they needed to give a jolt to the Soviet Union. So at the time, this didn't seem so outlandish.
Fire.
Just think of what a nuclear explosion would look like up there. The U.S. government once considered it. CNN has documents and interviewed the leader of a once secret Air Force project innocuously titled A Study of Lunar Research Flights, with a just as lowbrow nickname, Project A-119. What was it really?
To evaluate the value of putting a small, emphasize small, in this world anyhow, nuclear explosion on the moon.
He is a villain by the devil's law. He is a killer just for fun, 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 fun. The man's a snitch and unpredictable. He's got no conscience, he got none, 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 none. Oh, I know.
aware, I'm sorry, sir, that there are members of the Republican Party who have said that's a sacred area for them. They don't want to raise taxes on the wealthiest in this country. You know, they want to maintain the tax breaks that were passed during the Bush era for everybody or for nobody. So, you know, here we are. You've identified where your sacred areas are. They've got theirs. That's what I'm asking. Where is the middle ground in all of this, then?
Well, the middle ground is a fair share. And by putting the earned benefit programs on the table, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, as being the source for the deficit and the only way to reduce that and the only way to balance this, I think is wrong when there is no significant revenue, not just gestures or token appeals about tax deductions and other areas, but a significant restructuring of that code to bring us back in line the way that we were under Clinton.
Representative, you know what, as we're talking, the market is selling off once again every time members of Congress come on. And I've got to tell you, sir, I think you're contributing to the fears that we're going off the fiscal cliff, because it doesn't sound like there's any compromise in what you're saying. Do you care?
On UN Ambassador Susan Rice's investment portfolio and its connections with Iran. With these investments, how can she possibly negotiate with Iran? Joining us now by phone, former Pentagon advisor Michael Rubin. Michael Rubin, this is a disturbing story. I don't think it's been made public before. I don't begrudge Ms. Rice a successful investment strategy. I assume it's in a blind trust and she's not running it day to day. But these companies that are in here, let me read them. Royal Dutch Shell, Norsk Hydro, that's a Norwegian company, and BH Billiton. These are companies doing business with Iran, which, if I'm not mistaken, breaks a law that was put into place in 2007. What's your take on this, Michael?
Well, there's a question about whether the investments are legal or not. But putting that aside, if the main purpose of the Obama administration when it comes to Iran policy is to generate unity and pressure on Iran with the sanctions regime so as to avert the last resort, which is military action, then Susan Rice is going to be in a very difficult position to advocate for this when she's also profiting from it.
Why do you think this hadn't come out before?
'Cause mama, I'm in love with a criminal.
And the elephant is now enjoying life at Longleat Safari Park. But it was very different just a couple of years ago when she was cruelly chained up and beaten. This footage was captured by Animal Defenders International at the barn where Anne was kept during the winter when she wasn't touring with the circus. Today, circus owner Bobby Roberts was convicted at Northampton Crown Court of three counts of causing unnecessary suffering to the Asian elephant. Her new carers at the safari park say Anne is now having a wonderful time after settling into her new home.
I don't want to sound like a queer or nothing, but I think unicorns are kick-ass.
North Korea, as you know, North Korea puts out all sorts of statements all the time. So now North Korea is saying that in that area called Moran Park, they found a unicorn lair, which they also say in their official report on Korean state media, helped prove it. You can pull out of that map now, we're going back to Serbia, but helped show a sign that Pyongyang has been the capital even in ancient times. So they're even using that for a political statement. But keep in mind, North Korea says all sorts of things. North Korea liked to say at one point that Kim Jong-il, when he was alive, they said that there was a giant halo that appeared on his birthday and hung in the sky for an entire hour. They said the first time he ever went golfing, he got a hole in one. So the idea here is that there are still people who are being fed this kind of interesting reporting, you might want to say fantastical reporting, in North Korea, even now under Kim Jong-un.
Are you angling for a job with The Onion or something?
Following morning reports indicating that Philadelphia High School for the Performing Arts student Samantha Bylum deals with really weird social pressures on a daily basis, Onion reporters met with the 16-year-old dance student who described feeling regularly alienated from her peers for extremely bizarre reasons.
If you're not up to date on the latest urban street art or Esperanza Spalding albums, the other students will eat you alive. It can get pretty brutal. Just the other day, everyone cut class to go watch the Million Dollar Quartet musical at the Forest Theater, but nobody told me. Now I'm the only one that hasn't seen Lance Guest's rendition of Folsom Prison Blues. It's humiliating.
According to Bylum, the school year shows no sign of letting up as she continues dealing with the everyday stresses of auditioning for the school's production of My Fair Lady, keeping up with the latest punk Afrofusion dance groups, and not having enough fishnet sleeves to wear throughout the week.
Honestly, I don't know how the other students deal with it.
Oh my God, seriously?
Behind every Hellfire missile, there's an actual human being. Someone back at base remotely pulling the trigger. But the Pentagon is preparing for the day when robots are capable of killing on their own.
The machines, they're starting to take over.
It conjures up images of the Terminator.
Mr. Chairman, I need to make myself very clear. If we uplink now, Skynet will be in control of your military.
But you'll be in control of Skynet, right?
The Pentagon just issued its first directive on autonomous weapons, effectively forbidding the development of lethal weapons with no human control, to minimize failures that could lead to unintended engagements.
That's a sterile term for meaning harming innocents, killing the wrong target.
The Pentagon's Dave Ochmanek admits these weapons are still 20, 30 years away.
That technology doesn't exist yet, so why now?
The thought was technology is dynamic, and we'd like to get out ahead of it.
Just this week, the Navy tested its next-generation drone, which could carry bombs and land on an aircraft carrier with hardly any human control. The directive only applies to lethal systems and still allows the military to develop autonomous spy planes.
As we begin to approach the possibility of having machines select and engage targets, we want to be very careful not to cross that line without high-level policy review.
Human Rights Watch applauds the Pentagon's move.
We do not believe it solves the problem, however.
So the group is calling for governments to ban autonomous weapons outright. Bonnie Doherty points to Syria and wonders what killer robots could do in a conflict like that.
Because the weapons are emotionless, they could actually serve as a perfect tool for a dictator who would not have to worry about the danger of a human soldier turning on him if ordered to fire on his own civilians. A robot would not do that.
Again, the Pentagon is already taking the first steps to prevent the development of autonomous lethal weapons with no human control.
Don't stop, 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 don't
West Wales, there's a noise in the sky that's driving locals crazy. But that same sound in the air elsewhere in the world is enough to strike fear into citizens. RT's Polly Boyko explains what it is.
For victims in tribal regions of Pakistan, Yemen, and Afghanistan, it's the last sound heard before bloodshed ensues. A constant whirring that gets louder before it becomes visible. But for residents of the quiet coastal town of Aberporth in West Wales, the sound is synonymous with daily life.
This is the area where the RAF tests its Watchkeeper drone from. As you can see, there's one taking off behind me as we speak. In good weather, the drones take off throughout the day and during the night. And as you can hear, the noise is so high-pitched and dominating that local residents have called this area the Buzz Box.
For local people, the noise is a great disturbance because there's a whining noise and they fly over this area quite regularly.
The Welsh Government billed it as a state-of-the-art technology park that would create 400 to 500 much-needed jobs for the community. The reality, a half-deserted site where the Ministry of Defence employs about 30 people to help test the Watchkeeper.
There is a sense of frustration in the area. A number of people who were for it in the beginning are now opposed to it because they didn't realise the level of nuisance that there was going to be.
I'm not a robot without emotions. I'm not what you see. I've come to help you with your problems so we can be free. I'm not a hero. I'm not the savior. Forget what you know.
Behind the development of drones say it means less soldiers come home from war zones in body bags, but civilian casualties are piling up.
We know from Pakistan that somewhere around 2,000 to 3,000 people have been killed in drone strikes. Because of these unmanned systems, it's a lot easier to go to war, and therefore there will be much more warfare, and the world isn't safer.
The British government has already spent £2 billion on development, but they're about to commit another £2 billion on a new armed drone.
Of course, it could be better spent. It could be spent on hospitals and schools rather than on killing machines.
Despite drastic government cuts on welfare spending, financing for the drones isn't up for debate.
I am the modern man. Hides behind a mask.
Secret, secret, I've got a secret.
So no one else can see.
Secret, secret, I've got a secret.
My true identity.
Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto. Domo homo. Domo homo. Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto. Domo homo.
Domo.
Of drones with fins. The number of American drones has surged. You're probably aware of that, but I mean, the numbers are pretty incredible. In 2001, we had 50 of them. Now we have 7,500 drones. In a new twist, the machines designed to watch are now looking like fish. This is called the BioSwimmer. It was developed by the Department of Homeland Security to dart into hard-to-reach places underwater, and it's not the only nature-inspired robot. There is a cheetah. They put a skin on it. And of course, the Robo Mule, both developed by the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, which is called DARPA.
The problem's plain to see. Too much technology. Machines to save our lives. Machines dehumanize.
The time has come at last.
Secret, secret, I've got a secret.
To throw away the glass.
Secret, secret, I've got a secret.
Now everyone can see.
Secret, secret, I've got a secret.
November 23rd, 2012, Black Friday revealed yet further evidence of the complete madness of the populace of our lost society.
This is Aldous Huxley, a man haunted by a vision of hell on earth. Mr. Huxley, 27 years ago, wrote Brave New World, a novel that predicted that someday the entire world would live under a frightful dictatorship. Today, Mr. Huxley says that his fictional world of horror is probably just around the corner for all of us. We'll find out why in a moment.
This is the madness of a lost society. The underlying principles of modern consumerism, as designed by Edward Bernays, the father of modern propaganda, is to create demand where there is no real need. These people are victims of Bernays, and most of them cannot be reached. They cannot be helped. They will be among the tens of millions of Americans who will fall victim to unimaginable hardship, suffering, and hunger during the coming collapse. This microdoc is not for them. Most of them do not possess the intellectual curiosity to seek it out. This video is for those with the eyes to see and the ears to hear. It's for those who recognize that the madness of the crowds we see on Black Friday represents the very worst of what we have become as a nation. And it offers a very clear picture of where we are headed when the country we love finally collapses under the weight of tens of trillions of dollars of debt. As Aldous Huxley rightly predicted, these are the people who can be taught to love their servitude.
Through technology and more effective propaganda, the serfs, or us, would learn to love our servitude. We wouldn't even really acknowledge that we're essentially slaves to a small, technocratic, technologically advanced oligarchy.
The people that control our financial system are, by and large, the same people that are behind the globalist movement. And I think at the core of that, you're going to find probably somewhere between 6 and 12 old world key banking families that pretty much control the world's finances.
The scary thing is that by their own admission, they want to depopulate the planet by about 2/3. That's not great if you happen to be one of the people that's in their gun sights.
The actions that have been undertaken by monetary authorities to date and the actions they seem to be firmly committed to continuing absolutely and utterly guarantee the total destruction of the currency.
These men are predators on the American taxpayer money. These guys are not the job creators, they're the job destroyers.
The ordinary person doesn't understand what's going on here, and it's the paper in our wallets being driven to zero as fast as these criminals can do it.
We know this thing is going down. The establishment knows this thing is going down.
It is the destruction of the capitalist economy and of the free market by crony fascistic thieves.
Given the ills that are documentable that have occurred in our monetary system, I think it's a guarantee, probably in the near future now, we are going to experience a complete paradigm shift.
Everything here is unprecedented, other than the one universal that the fiat currencies always collapse. I mean, this is no different, except that it's now on a global basis.
The key is, when it does go down, we're not going to let them get away with their plan for total control, police state, financial terrorists controlling everything, digital currency, cashless society.
If we continue on this path, not only is it unsustainable, but it is complete and utter destruction.
As this is the first time in history that not a single currency on Earth is backed by anything.
What we're going to see in the coming collapse is most likely a derivative meltdown. And people really don't understand derivatives. They really don't get how widespread and gigantic these derivatives are. They're attached to every single financial product that we know of.
When the derivatives system starts to fail, really within minutes to hours, it will trigger a domino-like reaction among the entire financial system. And we're talking a biblical proportion type collapse.
This is the greatest bank robbery in world history, and the banks are doing the robbing. So when we're looking at the high levels of financial crimes, when you go back to the LIBOR scandal, covers over $700 trillion worth of derivatives and loans. And it's been rigged. Everybody knows it. Timothy Geithner, when he was the head of the New York Fed in 2007, he wrote emails about the LIBOR scandal. They were all hip to it. So the whole game is rigged.
There's no solutions right now for what the problems are, except really printing money and trying to inflate their way out of it.
We've been warned for years that you can't print your way to prosperity.
Basically, we're broke, and we have a storm coming that's really going to affect people.
It will really start in the banking world. What is going to happen is everything will stop. When people lose their checking account, their savings account, their 401k, they're going to be looking for answers. There's going to be anger in the streets. There's going to be anger at everybody involved in this.
When the dollar collapse happens, it's going to be global. There is no rescue coming. The gears of government will come to cease to exist.
This is a nationwide event, a historical event on epic proportions, because it's the first time in human history that the entire world is tied to nothing but fiat currencies, and specifically one fiat currency, the world reserve currency.
We have a soft society where everything's provided for us, and they have no clue about what the collapse of Western civilization might look like.
The reality is, when this new hard economic reality happens, whether it's Sandy or, more importantly, a dollar collapse, what do they want the most? They want food, they want fuel, they want security. They want to be able to sleep at night and know that they're going to be protected. And that's real wealth.
So the best thing to do is prepare for yourself, prepare for your family, help and educate others. But you need to be ready. You cannot depend on anybody else but yourself.
You have to physically beat feet out of dangerous areas. The areas that benefited the most off the dollar collapse will be the absolute worst place to be when the dollar ends.
Make plans in advance so that you can at least get out of Dodge at the 11th hour.
We've got 47 million people on food stamps. Just a few years ago, it was 29 million. And the scary thing is, nearly 50% of the people on food stamps have jobs. This is the situation we're in because people depend on the government. They just assume that the government is always going to be there to help them when they're in need.
When is the government coming?
They're sending their mobile units tonight, right?
We need gasoline.
Yeah, the Miller Field. There'll be food.
And gasoline to run generators. Yes. Bring us generators. Bring us something to get heat. We're going to die if we get killed with the weather. We're going to die. We're going to freeze.
I really hope people start taking this seriously and take action. I mean, if you can't move, well, then make sure you stock up on food and the means of protecting yourself. And, you know, those are the things that people should be starting to get their minds wrapped around now.
President Obama, please listen to us down here. We are going to die. You don't understand. You've got to get your trucks here on this corner now.
The lesson to be learned from Hurricane Sandy is that you must be prepared. Are you prepared if things go wrong? How much food do you have? How much cash do you have? How much gold and silver do you have? Do you know your neighbors? You got to think through all these problems and issues because a lot of people aren't ready for it.
You cannot look to others. You are the person. You're going to make the change in your localized community. You're going to be able to help other people. But it's only if you prepare. Because if you're not prepared for what's coming, you could literally starve to death.
Every family that's well stocked up represents one less family that's rushing to the grocery store at the 11th hour and cleaning out the shelves.
What if the entire nation ran into a currency crisis where your currency, your dollar, your hard-earned savings evaporate overnight and you go to the store and you're not looking at $7 bread, you're looking at $50 bread, or you're looking at a complete rejection of the currency you have in your hand?
Have a plan. What are you going to do if the society that you live in shuts down?
Make the mistakes now. Master the learning curves now. If you have the chance, move now.
At the end of the day, it's your decision to either be prepared and educated about what this means to you, your livelihood, your family, or you could be a statistic.
It's all coming to an end, whether you're prepared for it or not.
Bankster malfeasance, corporate greed, and collectivism has wrecked America and taken its once proud and self-sufficient people and made tens of millions of them dependent on the state by design. Those who understand this are blessed. We are among those who can prepare for the worst of what's to come. During the American Revolution, it was a tiny percentage of patriots who were awake enough to fight for liberty. After our currency collapses, it will be up to us to rebuild and to provide new guards for our security and for our liberties so that freedom can once again reign.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
Desserts are what I call desserts. Tray trays are entrees. I call sandwiches Sammy's, Sandoozles, or Adam Sandler's. Air conditioners are cool blasters with a Z. I don't know where that came from. I call cakes big old cookies. I call noodles long-ass rice. Fried chicken is fry-fry chicky-chick. Chicken parm is chicky-chicky-parm-parm. Chicken cacciatore, chicky-catch. I call eggs pre-birds or future birds. Root beer is super water. Tortillas are bean blankies. And I call forks food rakes.
Now, go find the others. .com.
Wait, ding ding ding. Uh-oh, looks like we're out of time. Goodbye.